Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, executive editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, the big news this week is that the daytime Emmys have been postponed due to the Writers Guild of America strike. So it was the 50th anniversary of the show. They were originally scheduled to air live on CBS on Friday, June 16th, with the Creative Arts Ceremony happening the next day. But now we'll have to wait to see when there will be an opportunity to hold them, you know, sometime down the line. So we spoke to all the nominees for a big special section in the magazine, you know, before they were canceled, of course. And all the actors were so looking forward to the big night, as were we. But as they say, good things come to those who wait. So we will certainly have something to celebrate somewhere down the line. And those interviews will just have to wait to be printed until then.
Yeah, I will say that I'm glad that they were postponed as opposed to canceled outright, which I suppose could also have been on the table. You know, this is a landmark year for the Daytime Emmys because it is their 50th anniversary. And there were also, as I understand it, you know, celebrations planned to honor GH's 60th and YNR's 50th. And also, on a sentimental note, we've just lost so many beloved members of the daytime community this year. John Aniston, Sonia Eddy, Elizabeth Hubbard, Jacqueline Zeman, you know, and they really deserve the spotlight that they would surely get in the in memoriam portion of the ceremony. Obviously, we will keep everyone updated on the rescheduled date as soon as we know it. We also have some happy real life news to report this week. Daze's Brandon Barash, who plays Stefan and was a recent guest on our podcast, announced that he and his wife Isabella are expecting their first child together. He also shares daughter Harper with his ex-wife Kirsten Storms, GH's Maxie, and soap alums Jessica Morris, who played Jennifer on One Life to Live, has tied the knot with her longtime love, Rib Hillis, who was poor Charles's Jake. Mazel tovs all around.
Oh, mazel tov indeed to all of them, and also to some on-screen couples. Uh-huh. You know, it's funny, but sometimes similar beats happen on shows at similar times, and this week is one of them. So we're going to see three engagements go down on three different shows, though each will have a different spin. So on Days of Our Lives, EJ will spontaneously propose to his ex-wife, Nicole, who may just prefer a little romance along with it. On Young and the Restless, Ashley and Tucker will reveal they're engaged, but definitely have an ulterior motive in doing so. And finally, on General Hospital, Sonny will pop the question to Nina, which is sure to thrill their fans. There is such an enthusiastic contingent pulling for these two, and it's the perfect time in terms of story. You know, seeing as how Nina dimed out Carly and Drew to the SEC, and I'm thinking Sonny might not be so happy when he finds out about that.
Yeah, I think that's a very safe bet. I spoke to Sonny's portrayer, Maurice Bernard, for a story about the proposal in the new issue, and he said that he considers it to be one of the very best proposals he's gotten to do on the show. And in just shy of 30 years, Sonny has been on bended knee quite a few times, so that is a high compliment. He said that Cynthia Watros, Nina, is amazing in those scenes, and even though he doesn't like usually watch his own performances, he is planning to tune in on proposal day to see if how he felt about the scenes in the moment translates to the screen the way that he thinks it will. We also have a really fun feature in the new issue where we talk to actors about their working experiences outside of daytime. And there are, you know, more than a few stars who have been part of iconic primetime shows like Murder, She Wrote and Highway to Heaven and Seinfeld. And I loved reading about, you know, what stands out to stars like Leanne Hunley, Daisy's Anna, and John McCook, B&B's Eric, about working on those famed sets. I had the pleasure of talking to James Patrick Stewart, GH's Valentine, for that section. And he had such cool stories about working on Seinfeld, working on Frasier, and also working opposite Meryl Streep in the movie It's Complicated. He told me that he was actually more intimidated to have to dance with Finola Hughes, Anna, for the recent fantasy sequence Time to the Nurse's Ball, in which Valentine and Anna hit the dance floor, than he was to work with Meryl Streep, which I thought was adorable.
Oh, me too. But let's be clear, when you're in Staying Alive, you're setting a very high bar for dancing. Yes. However, our guest today would easily have been perfect for that section. He's made his way around the daytime dial, but also racked up an impressive list of other credits. It's Billy Warlock, best known to us as Daze's Frankie and GH's AJ. So let's get him on the line and see how he's doing. Hi, Billy.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well, and we are so looking forward to a big catch-up with you.
I don't disappoint.
You will not. Absolutely not. But, you know, what's interesting about you is that you actually have like a history from childhood, basically, in show business. You were born in California into a family with some pretty strong ties to show business. Your father is a stuntman with a very impressive list of credits, including playing Michael Myers in Halloween 2, working as the stunt driver on Disney's The Love Bug. And for many years, he was Kurt Russell's stunt double. So to be clear, that's much cooler than what either Mara's dad or my dad did for a living. But did you ever get to go on set with him when you were a kid?
My mom and dad separated when I was 2 years old. I should say divorced when I was 2 years old. So I didn't see a lot of my dad until I moved in with him about 3 months before I turned 13. So it was 1972. I gave away my age, but anyway, I moved in with him. And then during the summer, I definitely got to go on the set and watch him do his thing and just kind of see how everything works behind the camera. And it always fascinated me. All my friends, you know, the standard deal is you go to high school and then you go to college. That's what you're supposed to do. And I knew that college wasn't for me because I knew that the industry was what I wanted to get into. But I didn't know at that time what part of the industry I wanted to get into. I just knew that I wanted to be a part of that industry because it was just so cool to be on the set and just the way things were, lottery, and it was totally cool. So anyway, that was definitely a nice indoctrination to the business, was hanging out with my dad on the set. Yeah.
So do you feel like your proximity to the industry sort of nudged you toward being part of it? Or do you think that if you'd been born in Iowa, you know, you still would have felt that pull toward showbiz?
No, I have to say quite often around my dad in the industry, definitely opened my eyes to it. I was not a young thespian, you know, I wasn't that theater kid or anything like that. So no, being around, you know, going to work on the set with my dad and what have you, I definitely knew because of that experience that's where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
Now, if we have this right, your own first professional gig was pretty much right out of high school as a stunt double for Robin Williams on an episode of Mork and Mindy. So what do you remember about how that came about?
Okay. That's true. My dad actually got the call. My dad was, do you remember? Okay. So back in the day, what was, you know, where they went around the track and they beat each other up? What was that, like skating around the track where they...
Oh, roller derby?
Yeah, roller derby. My dad was actually, he did that. And so, and my mom and dad both back in the 50s and 60s were big roller skaters. My uncle, I'm kind of like getting off the path here. My uncle actually, up until roller skating was debunked, my uncle was one of the top five in the country as far as like trained to compete in roller skating, all that dance stuff and spins and all that. Anyway, so my family was very big into roller skating. And so I obviously roller skated as a child. And so my dad got the call to double Robin Williams, and he was just a little too big for my dad, for Robin. Robin's a little guy like me, a little stockier than me, but short like me. And so my dad was like, no, what you want my kid. He's perfect for it. So my dad called me and said, get down to Paramount right now. So I grabbed my skates and went down and I roller skated for 10 minutes around the parking lot of Paramount. And they went, okay, great. We're going to Boulder for 2 weeks. Get ready. And that's what happened. So I got to roller skate down the Rocky Mountains and do a 45-foot high fall and hang out with Robin for a couple of weeks. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then Gary Marshall, who owned all those shows, Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy, Happy Days, all of them, and then went on to be, you know, this prolific director, of course. He directed those two episodes, that two-parter. And that's how I got to know Gary. And I remember when I got the call, when I decided to get into acting, Bobby Hoffman was the casting agent for all those shows. And I became friends with Bobby, kind of a nepo situation, if you will, when I was doing the Mork and Mindy two-parter. I met a lady on the set who happened to be Gary Marshall's secretary. And so that kind of helped me get to know all those people. And I became really good friends with Bobby. And Bobby one day said, so I understand you're taking acting classes. And I said, yeah, I'm just kind of playing around with it. I don't know. And he's like, come on in my office. Let me give you some pages. I want to see you do your thing. So I did. And he went, you know, you're pretty good for somebody that's never done this before. And I said, well, thanks. You know, and he said, I want you to go to Harvey Lembeck's improv class and start training with them. And of course, I was terrified. The first time I ever walked in, there was Robin and all these big hitters doing their thing. And I was like, I'm not getting up there. No way. you know, I didn't know what the hell improv was at that time, you know. And when Joni Loves Chachi got spun off, I actually read for that show. And I'll never forget, one of the things you had to do was go in and play an instrument and see how well you can do. And I don't play an instrument. But who was there? Mr. Stamos, who plays a damn good set of drums, as we all know. And all of a sudden, I followed that kid. And I was like, okay. And he gets up there and plays the drums. And I'm like, because that's what I was going to play. And I'm like, oh, fake it, if you will. And he just rocked it. And I came out and I was like, there's no way I can follow this, you know. And I made a joke about it and they laughed. And that was about the only laugh I got in the audition. But Bobby and everybody remembered me. And when Joni and Chachi went off to do their thing, they were replacing Scott. And it was me, this kid named Eric Schiff, and Michael Fox. And it was between the three of us. And to this day, I remember Ken Schreiner bumped into Michael one night at the improv. And they were talking and, you know, and my name came up and Michael told Ken, hey, you know what? Next time you see Billy, tell him thanks for saving my career. Because 3 weeks later, he landed Family Ties. Yeah, so not that I could have landed Family Ties and done anything as well as Michael ever did. Michael is a genius. And I must say, I'm so terribly sorry for what he's going through right now. That kid, that, you know, he's such a tragic thing, not to mention, selfishly, I'm sad that I don't get to watch him anymore. He was just as good as it gets, you know, so good.
There's that sort of a cluster of credits early in your career. So I'm not 100% sure what the chronology is, but I know it goes Mork and Mindy and then Halloween 2. Was that before you did Happy Days?
Yeah, it was. I got the part. Dad was Michael Myers. It was another nepo situation, if you will. So yes, my dad, it was interesting. My dad was the stunt coordinator, was originally hired as the stunt coordinator, and went in to meet the director just to have a meeting with him. And the mask was sitting on a desk and my dad picked it up and put it on his, and went to the door where he was obviously to enter into the office to meet the guy. And he turned sideways with his head and just kind of did this eerie look at the director. And the director was like, okay, I'm creeped out. Whoever's wearing that mask is going to play Michael Myers. And that's how my dad got the part.
Amazing.
And I can tell you this, my dad to this day, who is 83 years old, is far more popular and current today than I ever was. And it's like, man, he goes and does all these shows, like horror shows.
Right.
He crushes. I mean, it's amazing how popular he is.
The mask today.
It's pretty creepy, and he still has a bunch of that stuff. It's really cool. And Julie, who's a huge horror fan, couldn't wait to see it. But anyway, I did Halloween 2 with, who was the other guy that played with me? It was, I'm looking right at him, and he went on to be a huge producer, huge. But anyway, it'll come to me who it was. But anyway, he and I played a small little part, and it was just one night, one day, and it was just a little gig. Still get big residuals, about 92 cents a check. It's huge. You know,
huge.
And anyway, So continue with the, so from that, then Happy Days came actually.
Okay.
Because it was Mork and Mindy. And that, like I said, that part on Halloween 2 was, hey, I knew somebody, you know, show up that day and do the part and go home that night, you know, and that was it. And then, but the real stepping stone was Happy Days.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, now on that show, you played the Cunninghams' nephew, Flip Phillips, the younger brother of Ted McKinley's Roger. So what do you recall about, you know, getting that role? You appeared in 13 episodes, and had you been a fan of it before joining?
I grew up watching it. I watched every single episode of Happy Days. I was the biggest fan there was. And I was never more terrified when Bobby obviously took a shine to me, and he brought me straight to the producers. Now, I had no idea what the heck that even meant. I don't know. I'm going to producers. Okay. And they liked me. And the next thing I know, they brought me back to read with Henry. And that was the most terrifying thing I'd ever been through, because I was a massive fan. And on top of that, it's the great Henry Winkler, who I must say, I'm so happy his career has a second life to it, because the man is just brilliant. And, and such a sweet man. If you've ever had a chance to talk to him, I mean, he's the nicest man. But I will tell you, he's tough. He expects you to work hard and, you know, do your perfectionist. And it was interesting because I went in, I read with Henry. Next thing I know, I'm going to the network. And I went to the network and read for, at the time, Tony Thomopoulos was the president. And everybody was there, from Gary to you name it. It was a who's who of, you know, ABC and, you know, Gary's team. That's terrifying. I mean, you know, I'd never gone through anything. Didn't even know what to expect. And I'll never forget, I went in, I did my thing. And like I said, there was three of us. And I was the last one to go in and read. Now, I finished reading and I, you know, thank you, everybody. And I left. And I walk out through the lobby, go to the elevator, push the button, and I'm waiting for the elevator to come, and everybody, Hen, Gary, you name it, they all office, and they're in the elevator with me. And I'm terrified because, you know, I just read for them. I don't know if I did well or not, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, geez, this is embarrassing. I don't know what to do. I was literally a fish out of water, and you could hear a pin drop. Nobody said anything to me. They didn't even say hi when I got into the elevator. They all got in the elevator and they just sat there. And as we're writing down, Henry says, should we tell him? And Gary says, yeah, let's tell him. Welcome to the show, you know? And that's how I found out I got it.
Oh, my
God. I didn't even, I didn't even have a real agent at that time. I had a friend who was saying, you know, basically saying, if you book this, I'll rep you. And I'm like, oh, great. Let me just give you money. And that's what happened. I called the guy and I said, I booked it. And he was like, what? I'm like, yeah. And so they called and, you know, started negotiating and all that crap. And that's how it happened. So with the pilot, I think I ended up really doing 15 episodes altogether. And, you know, they didn't really do much with me because I wasn't very good. I sucked. I mean, I really did. I had one episode that they wrote for me, and I think I did a pretty good job, but it was more on the dramatic end of it. Because I don't want to go into that, but the episode was a little more dramatic than it was funny. And, I definitely wouldn't have made a pimple on Michael's butt as far as being funny. Let me just make that very clear. So personally, Happy Days made a mistake not giving it to Michael. You know, that character probably would have finished out the show. And trust me, Michael Fox would have ended up doing what Michael Fox ended up doing, regardless of what show he landed, because he's that good. So anyway, that's what happened.
Amazing. Amazing. So it was after Happy Days that mm-hmm. Billy Warlock's career takes this pivot, which we are so grateful it did, and the daytime soaps. came into your life, beginning with the role of Ricky Driscoll on Capital in 1983. So what do you remember about how that gig came about? And, you know, it does seem like a pivot because you'd been doing so well in primetime.
Yeah, I was. And I had no interest. Not that I was against it. I was a big daytime fan. Let me make this. I mean, I used to come home and my senior year in high school. I would finish school. I only had 4 classes. I had enough credits and I would come home and watch General Hospital. And anybody that knows me in the daytime world knows that Mr. Schreiner is one of my besties. We've been besties for 40 plus years. And I was a huge Scotty fan. And so I was actually, Ken and I were very close. Even before I started daytime, we had met playing on a David Marish basketball team, which was a celebrity team where we'd go around to high schools and generate money for the high schools. And I was sitting on Ken's couch. Actually, we had just got done playing basketball. I was sitting on Ken's couch and the phone rings. It's my agent. And she said, hey, I got an offer for you to do 5 shows on Capital. Would you be interested? And Ken was sitting there, of course, yeah, you're darn right. You're interested. Come on. You know, and I was like, all right, yeah, I'll do it. Be an interesting experience. And so I had just done a pilot that didn't get picked up. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And I went in, and the first day I had a scene with the lady I was playing opposite, and I didn't even, I mean, I think we did one scene, and I think I had 3 or 4 scenes that day, and out came John Conboy, and who owned the show and was the executive producer, and he came out and he said, hey, come here. And I said, what's up? And he said, I want you on my show. Would you sign a contract? And I was like, well, that's a little weird, you know? And I was like, well, you know, call my people, you know what I mean? Acting like I know what that means, you know? And I signed a 1-year contract with that show. I didn't really want to commit to anything longer than a year because I didn't know if I was going to like it. And quite honestly, they really didn't have anything for me. I had no story. They just brought me on because he liked me at that moment. And that's how it all started. And in through that relationship with daytime, because as you know, back then, especially, you know, there was like 13 shows on and everybody knew, got to know everybody and everybody was family. You know, the daytime world, as we know, is a big, big family. And that's what kind of led to me meeting a lot of people, producers and, you know, Synergy and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of my indoctrination into the daytime world was Capital for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what were you like at this point? I mean, you're like, what, 20 years old? You kind of have a bunch of credits under your belt now, you know, in a career that maybe you weren't necessarily pursuing heavily when it all started. So like, what was your state of mind at that point?
I really didn't have one, Steph. I mean, you know what I mean? I was just going with the flow. I mean, I was a guy that was making enough money to pay my bills and I had no plan. And as you will soon find out in my career, I never had a plan. That was probably the biggest flaw I've made in my life as far as, I always went with the flow and then, you know, cut my nose off to spite my face multiple times throughout my career. But anyway, at that particular time, I really had I will say this. Right after I finished Capital. I'm going to back up just 1 second. When I was doing Happy Days, I had heat. And I remember getting a call and I went down to Zoetrope and it was for The Outsiders. And it was literally, I walked into Zoetrope and there was literally only about 10 of us that were invited to this special auditioning process with Francis, which was the thrill of my life, obviously. And I mean, everybody was there. I mean, you know, you name it, Rob and all those guys were there. And the only ones that weren't there, Tom wasn't there. Tom Cruise wasn't there. Swayze, they offered it to. I didn't even know who Swayze was at that time, to be honest. And of course, Matt Dillon, who was hot as can be at that time. Right. He was like the biggest of all of us at that time. Now, I was nobody at that time, really. I mean, you know, Ralph had Karate Kid and, you know, success. And C. Thomas was doing those little cute movies and whatever. And so, you know, I knew who the guys were, but I didn't know them that well. That's when I knew I was kind of in the game, right? When all of a sudden you're going to Zoetrope. So I just kind of went with the flow, and now I'm on Capitol because obviously I didn't book Outsiders. So when I joined the show, I became really close with obviously Catherine Hicklin, who I had met before but didn't know. But I got very close with Catherine, but Todd Curtis and I were inseparable, and so I had really great relationships with everybody on the show, and then obviously meeting, you know, all the great Richard Egans and Connie Towers and all those people that were just Rory, you know, the great cowboy of all time, Rory Calhoun. And I mean, it was a great experience, a great learning experience. It really was. Because I'll tell you what, there's no better training ground and what have you than daytime. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's just fact. And but I remember when I finished that show after that year, I told my agents, no, I want to be a film actor. And I didn't go up for one pilot whatsoever. That pilot got to be in New York called Hot Shot with Pele.
We lost, Billy, the audio cut out again from like when you said that you told your agent, I assume no more soaps is what you said to him.
Yeah, well, just no more TV. Okay. I wanted to be a film actor, you know. And then I got an offer to do a movie in New York, a soccer movie with Pele and Jim Youngs. Jim Youngs was the bad boy from Footloose. He was the boyfriend in Footloose. Anyway, so I went and did that. And I'm thinking, okay, I got some things going on. And I was very engaged and about to be married to Marcy Walker. And so it was a pretty exciting time. I was 25 at that time. And I came back after the movie and got offered a pilot that didn't go, but great cast. George D'Souza was played my dad, and just Richard Young and Sal Vascuzzo, who was Father Tim, I believe, in the sitcom Soap way back with Billy Crystal. Anyway, it was a great cast. And it didn't go. And then I couldn't do another pilot because I did that in September of 1985. And normally pilot season is in January to March, if you will. And so I was locked up, couldn't do anything. And that's when Shelley called me right after pilot season, April of 86, and said, come on in. And I went in and screen tested with Missy Reeves, and it was me and Wally Kurth and Roger Lodge. And I don't remember the other guy. And it was kind of a mock test. It was mine to have. And I got it. And I started. They had no story for me. They created my character for me. And one thing led to another. And that was it. Missy and I took off. And it was that was the best time of my life at that time, obviously. It was incredible what was going on with that show and with the character and the relationship with Missy. And it was just that was a special time, no doubt.
Oh my gosh. Of course. I was a huge Frankie and Jennifer fan. I remember like literally the day you started at the show. So to say that you made an impact is an understatement. But tell us about working with Missy and what stands out to you when you look back at that time with her.
Everything, just total goodness. I mean, Missy is, you know, you all know, she's the nicest, sweetest person you're ever going to meet. And it was interesting because Missy and I always crushed on each other, which is why we worked so well together as well. You know what I mean? We really respected each other's, I don't want to say talent or whatever. That sounds so grandiose, but we really respected each other. But we also she was with somebody, I was married. But we definitely had sparks. There was no question about it. And, which is why it worked so well for us. But, you know, the thing that what people don't know, you know, there's so much that goes on behind. And, you know, I left Days in 88, not because I didn't want to be there anymore, not because I didn't love the character and what have you. Al Rabin ran that show with a formulation, and it was brilliant. And, you know, you'll never hear me knock what Al did. Al was a great executive producer. He was a vision. She knew when things were working, how to, Jelly was the best at was just little niblets of goodness of do this, do that. And that scene will be just that much better. And it would be so subtle, but she was such a visionary and so supportive and loving. I mean, I adore Shelley. Shelley and I were very close. But here's the thing. Missy and I were the teen lovers. We were, you know, so we only worked a week. Occasionally, even in the summer, we only worked maybe 3 days a week. We never had a 5 day a week, every day. And in soap operas, what people don't know is you get paid per show. Okay. So it doesn't matter if you're making a lot of money per show. Well, it does. But the point is you get paid per show, not per week. So it's not like on a nighttime show where you get X amount of dollars per episode and you can only work one day. You may only have one scene, but I still get that money. Whereas in soap operas, it's all about how many days a week you're really working. And so we were formulated as a week. And monetarily, that was frustrating for me because I knew how popular we were. I mean, it was literally me, Missy, and obviously Patch and Kayla, you know, Steve and Mary Beth. We were the show at that time. But they were working 5 days a week because they were the adults. But guess what? I was 27 at the time, not 18 like Frankie. So I was like, this monetary working for me. And I'll never forget. Nina Pakula, my agent at the time, just a lovely lady. We went in and sat down with Al and said, listen, what's going on? I mean, are we going to bump this up or is this it? Are you keeping us at 2 days a week because that's what's working for your show? Because I can't do this. And he was like, no, this is it. It works for us. So, you know, take it or leave it, basically. And I then went, okay, sayonara. And that's what basically happened. And then, I mean, I hadn't even left the show and I had a movie that I went off to do, this horror thing called Society. And then I was making Society when I booked Baywatch. And so, you know, I made the right decision at that time because I was just, things were coming my way. And, you know, when Baywatch got canceled after the first season, and it didn't get canceled because of the ratings, it got canceled because of business. And then Days asked me, I mean, the show got canceled and a week later Days called me back. And I'll never forget going into that meeting and Ken was there, Al, Shelley, come on back to the show. And they took care of me very well. And I was like, absolutely, I'm coming back. But I can't lie. They didn't tell me what the story was. They wouldn't tell me what the story was. And when I came back, I didn't come back for Missy. I came back for Charlotte. Don't get me wrong. Love Charlotte. Awesome talent. And loved working with her on every level. Just a wonderful lady and just such a great actor. I actually learned a lot from her. She is just so good. But I wanted to come back and be with my Missy.
Yeah.
And they had already loved Jack and Jennifer. And I said, listen, let's go toe to toe. Let the fans right now. Definitely pro Jack and Jennifer, but give me that shot and I can get it on pretty well. We're going to make some good stuff. And they wouldn't do it. And then we went on that big train of dissect that thing was. And I was just disappointed where the story was going, and then I got the call to go back to Baywatch. So it was like, listen, I had a 1 year contract, no cut, lots of money. It was a great deal. And I just was not into what I was doing on the show because I wasn't coming back to do what I really love to do. Call it selfish, call it unprofessional, I don't care, whatever, but that just wasn't what I wanted to do. And I didn't need to come back. I wanted to come back. So I left again.
Just going to say, they had also really revamped the character at that time. Remember, that was when the Francois von Leuchner.
Yeah, don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. And that's when the first day on the set, which they never told me, the first day on the set, I'm locked in a room because I was captured by, I don't know, whoever, or whatever you call it. I don't know. It's one of the Cassadines or whatever it was.
The Alamein.
And I'm sitting in this, what was it?
The Alamein. Now the Alameins.
That's it. The Alameins. And so I'm sitting there in this thing and they, you know, and all of a sudden I'm like Francois von Leuchner. And that was deception. And that's when I went, I'm out. And I knew from that point I was only going to do a year. But then I wasn't 4 months into the contract on a year. And that's when the Baywatch guys called and said, we're rebooted. Let's go. And I was like, I'll do anything to get out of here. Anything. And that's what happened. And so, you know, I went to Al and said, I want off. I'm not, you know, and he was like, what are you talking about? I was working 5 days a week. It just wasn't what I was kind of sold on, to be honest. And I was like, no, it's not working for me. I'm definitely not going to resign in a year. So why would you invest in me, continue to invest in me when I am definitely leaving? Because you lied to me, basically. And by the way, I must say that Al and I were really good friends after that. In fact, we belonged to the same golf country club. We used to see each other and couldn't say, on a personal level, loved the guy. But he was a businessman. And so business-wise, we did not get along. Personally, we were great friends. So anyway, that's what happened. I went back to Baywatch, which is another fiasco. Yeah.
Let's not give Baywatch short shrift. Yeah. Like, this was like an international sensation. So talk about just your Baywatch experience and like sort of what it did for you personally and professionally.
How it changed Billy Warlock's life.
You know what? I have to say Days had a bigger impact on my career than Baywatch did. So here's what happened with Baywatch. Try to make this as short as possible. So Baywatch, in fact, there's a documentary getting ready to come out about Baywatch that we did. I think it's going to be sold to like one of those Netflixes, whatever. Matt Felker was the executive producer, one of the great guys, just a true, honest guy. Anyway, so Baywatch, what happened was when the show got canceled, you know, Erica and myself, really, without sounding grandiose or anything, I mean, it was really our show. And you know, what started off as, you know, David coming in and whatever, Erica and I, and then, of course, they brought on John Allen Nelson and Parker Stevenson. It became the four of our show, and we just loved it. It was the best experience I ever had. And when the show got picked up to go into syndication, we were made a lot of promises. Not to mention the show became at that time. I knew when we were on the set the first day and the camera started up a girl's bosom with a thong. I was like, what are you doing? What is that? And they're like, we don't have Big Brother anymore. We can do whatever we want. And I was like, this is not the direction I really wanted to go. Because business sense wise, I'm the dumbest guy there is. But back then I had integrity, darn it, you know, and that, you know, because Baywatch went 13 seasons with multiple different shows that had I stayed on that franchise, I would have done them all and I could have bought Telluride. But no, I'm an idiot. So I had integrity. And when we went in to negotiate, because we had only signed a 1 year, well, actually we signed a little more than that, but at the end of the first season, which was the second season, but the first season syndication, Eric and I went in with our people, with everybody, and said, listen, what are we doing? Are you guys going to step up and make the, and are you going to make the promises true? And they went, no, this is what you get, take it or leave it. And we said, see it. At the time, I thought it was, and that's all there is to it. I mean, because we took a cut and pay to go back, make it up if the show got picked. It got picked up, did really well. Show. And by the way, David, who I absolutely adore. I mean, David, I'm sure have you ever talked to David, Steph? I mean, you haven't?
No.
Okay. Well, I can tell you he is the most charming, funny. Oh my God, is the guy funny. And he's just a good dude. But when we also came back, he became my boss. That wasn't going to fly with me. And I was never told that either when I came back. And I wasn't disappointed in David becoming my boss on a personal level, because David's a great guy. It was, if an actor isn't boss, that means we're going to get shortchanged. That's just the way, especially with David. And David was going to say, because listen, on NBC, it was our show, not David's show, but it was going to be David's show this time. And I just thought that there was a lot of deception going on. And so when we went in to negotiate it, and like I said, they said, no, this is what you get. I was like, okay, I guess it's over. I'll see you later. And, you know, said the shoot. I ended up with Stephen Cannell, which I thought at that time was obviously the right thing to do. But that ended up going nowhere. And, you know, and it's just been, you know, bad choices. Not that that was a bad choice. That was a lot of fun working on that show and being around Stephen Cannell. You know, that was just pro stuff. I mean, the guy, you know, he knows how to run a show and he knows how to write a show. And I mean, fans out there that don't know who Stephen J. Cannell is, please look him up. I mean, the guy's, you know, he was, God rest his soul, an epic. I mean, the guy had more shows back in the 80s, you know, A-Team, Riptide, all those shows were his. Guy had, you know, an enormous amount of shows on the air at one time, going back to Rockford Files. I mean, he was genius, and so humble. That's the one thing I've come away with. People that are super, super, really, you know, talented and iconic are some of the most humble, nice people I've ever met. And that, you know, that's special. I mean, it's beyond. I mean, all those 80 shows from Riptide to A-Team, you name it. I mean, you know, Rockford Files even. I mean, the guy was an icon. So to be a part of that and work with him and get to know him, it was extremely special. So, you know, no regrets there by any means. So that's what happened with Baywatch. I mean, really not that dramatic. And there you go. So what else? Where are we going from here?
We got to go to General Hospital, Billy. Because that's where you went next in your daytime meanderings. So, Well, you played the role of AJ Quartermain. Obviously, on that show, part of an absolutely iconic daytime family. So, you know, what stands out to you when you think about working with your on-screen parents? Let's start with them, Leslie Charlson and the late Stuart Damon.
Special. I didn't really know too much of what was going on, but I had met with everybody and actually read, which was, gotta say, quite humiliating. But I went in and with humility and went in and read for Port Charles. And it was more of a meeting reading. It was weird. It was kind of like there was a girl there. I don't remember the actress. And I think it was really more of a match. More to see us together. And, you know, I'm, as you know, one of the other reasons Missy and I worked was we fit. I'm a short guy and she's a teeny little lady. And together, you know, we were a little powerhouse short couple. But, you know, most women in daytime are quite tall. I am not. So I think the matchups for me were quite difficult. And I never heard from General or Port Charles and at that time it was Wendy Rich running the show, and I never heard anything. And then when they had recast AJ with this other guy, they had done like 7 episodes with this kid. I don't know who it was, and it didn't work out. So they needed to replace this guy quickly. And I came in and just met with everybody, but there were a bunch of other actors there. I mean, who was the Blue Lagoon actor?
Christopher.
Yeah, that kid. I mean, there were a bunch of actors there. And I walked in and I almost turned around and left, you know, because I was like, no, I'm not playing this game. I don't need this freaking job. Don't do this to me. You know, I'm not here to kiss your ring. All right. I have proved myself in daytime. You either want to hire me or you don't. And so I came in and 2 hours later, the deal was set. And it was, and the only reason it was set was Barbara Bloom said, that's who you're going to hire. He can do this in his sleep. He's the guy. Stop messing around. Go. Wendy was never pleased with that. So I was not in Wendy's bosom ever. And I don't think the writers were as well. You know, I think they were like, what are we doing with this Michael Fox lookalike guy? What are we going to do with this guy? Because let's face it, you know, you had the blonde Adonis and Sean. And then in comes Michael Fox. I can understand their, you know, questioning, what the heck are we doing with this guy? And, but, you know, it took about 2 to 3 years to win the fans. I mean, it really did. It was not a pleasant a pleasant character to play because they kept him in a box. You know, he was a gimmick. He was there for, you know, basically for Maurice and Burton. And yeah, it was a shitty place to work. Not on a personal level with the actors and the crew. They were all fantastic. And I love those actors. Not one actor that I dislike whatsoever. I loved them all. And Maurice and all those guys. And Burton, of course, and I have known each other for years. In fact, here's a fun fact. You remember when I told you that I ended up dating a woman that was Gary Marshall's assistant? Mm-hmm. It was Steve Burton's ex-stepmother. How about that? I just thought I'd throw that in there. Because Burton and I used to laugh at that. But anyway, yeah, it was not a pleasant place to work only because the character was, I just used to fight all the time about what are we doing with the character? Why are we keeping him in this box? And I mean, Steph, come on, you and I talked about it ad nauseum at times, right? And it just wasn't, there was nothing. I mean, I knew what I was going to do when the script came to my door. I didn't even have to look at it. I just knew, oh, I'm working with those two. Okay, I'm going to be put on a meat hook, or I'm going to be, you know, they're just going to crap all over me that day. I just knew it. And that became really, really old. And the only saving grace was the fact that I was very close with everybody and enjoyed everybody. And especially, of course, John Engel, you know, was John and Stuart were my best friends. I mean, they were my best friends. I mean, regardless of, you know, working with each other, we saw each other all the time outside of, in fact, I saw Stuart more outside of work than I did working. I mean, we play golf together constantly. And John, you know, we'd wheel him out on the golf course to get that old body moving around. It was so much fun playing golf with John. But I mean, John was my guy. I mean, I was with him up until the day he died. I mean, literally, he died in the middle of the night, and I had left him that afternoon. And I got a great little anecdote about, I had a Rolex that I always wore. So John went out and got a Rolex, but he got the fancy one, the gold Rolex and all that stuff. And I used to, you know, tease him about it, you know. And when I would go see him, when he was in hospice care, and he'd go in and out of consciousness, and it was just so painful to watch, but it was such a blessing to actually be there and be with my friend. And he wore the watch until the day he died, along with his wedding ring. And I would tease him, "You're wearing that watch? Come on, dude, you got a foot in the grave. Take that thing off, would you?" And he'd just, you know, and then he'd flip me off, you know. And that's just what we, you know, it was just fun. And Christmas morning, he died September 12th. And Christmas morning, I got a knock on the door from FedEx, and it was his gold watch and his family. Yeah, he wanted me to have that gold watch. It was just so beautiful. And then going back, I felt in and will have you to be asked to give me for Stuart at his memorial. And I was the only actor that got to do that. Out of all the, it was me and Leslie, but you know, to only have been on that show for seven, to know that I made that kind of an impact on he and his family, and it's just that's what I remember most about General Hospital, is just them, is you know, it was such a, yeah, that was what made, that's what, to be honest, that's what kept me re-signing. You know, re-upping my contracts was because of them. Mm-hmm. But towards the end of my last signing, I had just re-signed for another 3 years. And Stuart wasn't working, and John wasn't really working that much either. So I wasn't getting to work with them anymore. I was, you know, still in a story that was, you know, hanging out, getting beat up by Steve and Maurice. Not personally, mind you. Let's make that perfectly clear. These
Sonny and Jason.
I can't tell you how many times I go to work and they just look at me and go, "You poor bastard." You know, and I'm like, "I know." And he goes, and they'd say, "Hey, we're sorry, man. We don't mean to do this to you, but you know, we gotta do this." And I'm like, "Of course, you know." But you know, I had just resigned and I knew I made a mistake on a personal level. I was like, "I can't." And Jill was the executive producer at that time, who I got along with and really adored. And I went to Jill. Not a month after I resigned and said I made a mistake. you know, can we think about getting me out of here? And she said, let me talk to the boys. And that was Bob Guzin and Chuck Pratt, who were writing the shows at that time. And she called me like a week or two later and said, yeah, we're going to honor it, but you got to finish your cycle, which took me into November. And I knew that I wanted to go to New York and do try my luck at theater and give it all up. Yeah, going back to like 1985, no more TV. So this was like, I want to be an actor. I'm going to go to New York and do theater. Now, let me tell you something. To try to go to New York and do theater when your main credits are Baywatch and soap opera, luck, right? So anyway, I leave the show and I hooked up with a New York agent. And he thought I was crazy to leave all this and go to New York and do theater, which, you know, you don't make money doing theater whatsoever. But I had done well enough. And I was like, okay, no, I'm doing this. I'm going to be an actor, darn it. I'm going to get my chops back. I'm going to get things going. And, you know, long story short, he sent me this play called The Normal Heart, which is just a gut-wrenching play about when the AIDS epidemic hit back in, you know, 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86. And they did the play at the Public Theater, which, if anybody out there does theater, it's Joe Papp's Shakespeare in the Park Theater. It's the off-Broadway theater in the world, much less New York or anywhere else. And it's pretty much doing Broadway. I mean, all actors that are worth their salt has done a play at the Public Theater. And I get my agent in New York says, I'm sending you a play. And he didn't tell me what it was. And I had known about The Normal Heart, but didn't really know too much about it. And I read it and I was like, oh crap, this is terrifying, you know, because it's just such a gut-wrenching play. But the part that I originally went in for was this guy Bruce, who is basically the stray gay guy, right? He's the guy that's in the closet, nobody knows. He's got the eulogy in the play, though, about his boyfriend was, you know, died, and they put him in a trash bag and left him out in the back alley in the trash. That's what they did with him. So if there's one thing I can do is hit emotion. And so I went in and read that for the great Larry Kramer, who created the GMHC, and he was a big gay rights activist, you know, back with Stonewall and all that. I mean, this guy is iconic. He just passed away not long ago. And so I went in and read for this, you know, Larry and the entire team. And I did that eulogy, and he just looked at me and he said, why do you want to do this play? And I said, because one, it's want to be an actor. And he said, yeah, but you look at all the stuff you've done. Are you sure you really want to do this? Because this is going to kick your butt. And I was like, yeah, I am sure. And he said, okay, I want you to grab the sides of Felix and learn it and come back in. Like I had to go outside, learn a whole new thing, and then come back in 10 minutes later. And Felix, believe it or not, was the one role when I read that play, I was like, thank God I'm not playing Felix. Because that was the scary role. That was the one that I was most terrified to play. And sure enough, there I was. And I came back in and I must say I crushed it. And Larry stood up and said, to come back in 2 days. But in the meantime, I want you to go to closing night, which was that night, to go see Taboo and watch Raul Esparza, who was in the play, who's, you know, Tony winner. The guy's a badass. He was on Law and Order for many years as the DA. I mean, it's just, now that is the most prolific actor I've ever worked with in my life. This guy is brilliant. I mean, and just a lovely, lovely man. I mean, unbelievable. So I go to see him with Tom Citrano. So Tom was living in New York at the time, and I was actually staying with him. So we go to this play, and out comes Raul for his aria. And I turn to Tom and I'm like, I'm going to need a bigger boat. This guy is just, I was so intimidated by him. And I came back in 2 days later and read with him. And we just hit it off. And Larry got up, stood up, walked over, hugged me and said, you're it. I was like, oh, crap, here we go. And that was it. And I did the play for 6 months at the Public. And it was incredible. It was just an incredible experience. They had talked at that time to taking to Broadway, which they did later with much bigger stars than me. thank God, because if it had gone to Broadway, maybe I had done it, but they were thinking about extending it at the Public to get a chance to go to Broadway, and I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have extended. It was just too painful, physically draining. It, you know, because on off-Broadway, schedule is a lot different than it is on Broadway, and it just kicks your butt. And it's a 3-hour play. And to die of AIDS every night, not fun. You know, but luckily it went on and it didn't. And they did the HBO movie, which was so good. Everybody was just amazing in it. And it was just great to be a part of that legacy, you know?
Absolutely.
And then I did a little movie called Fatwa with Angus McFadden and Lauren Holly and whatever. And then we had some major drama with regarding Days and General Hospital. So I get a call from my agent saying that General Hospital wants you to come back. And I was like, no, not interested. Well, they only want you to come back for 3 episodes. And I said, okay, only if I'm not coming back to be totally and utterly humiliated again. Yes, but I want to see what it is I'm doing before I commit to this. And they wouldn't let me. I had to take Jill's word for it. I was like, okay. Well, I had an inside source that called me. Now, I'm supposed to leave on a Sunday night to work Monday. I was going to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and be done and go back to New York, go back home. And I found out Friday that they were going to kill me from my inside source. I lost it. I said, that's it. I'm not going. Screw them. Well, then I got threatened to be sued. And I mean, it just got ugly within that 24-hour period. And I remember that entire weekend, I was a total recluse. I was so upset, never more freaked out and pissed off in my life. And got on a plane, said, screw it, I'm going to go, I'm going to do it. And I got there and Jill came up to me and I was like, literally, Jill, get away from me. Don't, no, let's just do this. Let me go home. You know, you lied to me. And I did a couple of scenes. Then Jill came back out. Wait a minute. Hold on. Nope. We're on track. Okay. So then Jill came back out and she's like, no, come here. I said, what's up? And she said, the boys want to talk to you. We're not killing you. We're faking it. We didn't want anybody to know. Okay. So after I finished working, the boys called me up to Jill's office and the three of us sat there. And this is Chuck Pratt, Bob Guza, and Jill. And they wanted me to come back to the show, period, like all the way. And they're like, we have great stuff for you. It's going to be great. Of course, I didn't trust them. And I really wanted to be in New York. And I wanted to remain in New York. And I said, no. And they said, okay, what's the amount of time you'll give us? And we all discussed it. And it was like, so how much, you know, what can we compromise on? And we came up with 3 months. So I went back to New York for 2 weeks before I was to come back to do General Hospital for 3 months. This is in, I want to say February. I was going to come back and I came back in late January and I was there until like the 1st of April. So yeah. So now I'm back and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to do 3 months. It's like doing a movie. I'm going to repad my kitty and give me more time in New York and have, you know, well, within that 2-week period, I got a call from my agent saying Days want you. And I went, what? I said, okay, I just turned down General Hospital. I don't really want to do Days. So let's instead of saying no, let's just make a number that I know they won't match. Well, they did. And we went, oh, crap. All right, we're going to Days. Here we go. And I remember getting a call from Ken. Welcome back to your home. We'd love to have you. This is going to be great. In fact, I even got a call from my you-know-who wife, who then heard I was coming back, who had dumped me several times prior, by the way. That's a whole other story. I had not seen Julie but one time in 5 years. And so anyway, I digress. So now I go back to GH for 3 months. And I have to tell you, it was the best experience I ever had. They gave me such great material. And I remember going to Carol Scott's memorial. I was doing Days at the time. Oh, before I say this, it's funny. My first day back on General Hospital, Jill Phelps always wore black, always just draped in black. And she came out to the set. And I'll never forget the director, Bill, who had done Days with me way back when. Jill came out and was just, her arms were crossed and she had this scowling face and she was just evil eyeing me. And she said, I thought you didn't want to go back to daytime. I heard you're going to Days. And Bill turned to her and said, you couldn't even come close to the money that he got on Days. And I said, it's true. And Jill just stormed off, you know. And then we did the 3 months and had a great time. But anyway, going back to Carol, who was a lovely lady, I'll never forget, Bob Guza, of all people, came up to me and said, listen, and this was during the Emmy nomination time where you nominate, you know, the Emmy people. And she said, I fought to nominate you because you crushed it. And, but they were, there was no way you were going to get nominated here because you're on Days now. And we're not happy about you being there. And I must say, I completely and totally underestimated you, your ability. And I am really sorry that I never wrote for you. And I'm sorry we made a mistake. And that was all the vindication I needed right there. I was like, okay, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate that you knew that I was a better actor than you gave me credit for, you know? And so that was great. But I am sorry that that I made the choice to go to Days after what happened with Days. Because when I went back to Days, they had no story. I mean, I was there. Listen, they were paying me an ungodly amount of money. And I didn't even work a day. My contract started May 1st. I didn't even work until July 4th show. And I even said to Kate, well, what's up, bud? You need an ungodly amount of money to play golf. I don't get it. He's like, I know, man, we have no story. Why'd you ask me back? I mean, I could have, you know, I mean, was this so that I wouldn't go to GH? I mean, I don't understand. What the heck is going on? He's like, I know, I got to talk to my writers. This is crazy, blah, blah, blah. And I only lasted a year and a half there. They had no story. You know, I ended up being Matt's keeper, you know, go be with Missy because I'm dying and or whatever he was going through. And I need you to be my guy to take care of her. And I was never more humiliated. Going back to Dave's was getting back to Julie, which was not an easy task to begin with either. I mean, we had broken up a couple of times again during that time. And but yeah, I never understood why I was back. And then Hogan Sheffer came in to write the show. I want to say this is now 2006 or seven, and I had been on the show for about a year and a half with zero story, but paid a ton of money to do nothing. Hogan was like, "Yeah, we're not thinking we got to, you know," and so we parted ways. And Julie was released as well. So then from there, you know, I got a I kind of hung out, which was great. But then I got a great call to do. I ended up doing 6 months on Y&R. You know, no story. I just worked a couple of days a week. You know, it was great. It was a lot of fun. Got to work with Bergman and those guys and, you know, Michelle Stafford, and it was just great. Sharon Case, it was great. It was a great time. Had no story. But the executive producer at the time was a dear friend of mine and created that little character for me. And it was great. And then during that time, Julie got the call to go do As the World Turns in New York, which I was ecstatic, going, yeah, we're going back to New York. This is great. And then we ended up back in New York, and it was great. That was one of the best times of our lives. We had so much fun in New York. Yeah, I did that. And then I, you know, got to do As the World Turns with her. That was a hoot. Ended up on One Life to Live, which I got a story about that one. Holy crap. So I'll never forget sitting in my apartment that one morning and my phone rings and it's Michael Bruno. It's Bruno. Billy, it's Bruno. Got to talk to you. Got big stuff. I'm like, yeah, what's up, Bruno? He's like, I got Frank Valentini on the line, who I used to see around town and blah, blah, blah. And Frank was always, I've known Frank for many years, just on a, you know, very superficial level. But I've known him. And I mean, way back when they were in the old studio and whatever, when he was just an associate producer before he became producer and an executive producer and all that. So anyway, Billy, I need you. I'm like, what's up? Because when can, I'm like, you mean today? He's like, yeah, yeah, you're replacing an actor and I need you right now. And I'm like, okay, let me take you there and I'll be there. And I said, all right. So hung up, took a shower, went down to the studio. They handed me like 45 pages of dialogue. I'm like, what the hell? Ross, what May Wayburn, Mayburn, something Rayburn, like that. Rayburn. Ross something. Yeah, whatever. And I'm like, okay. I didn't know who I was replacing at the time. I didn't know anything. And so I go into Frank's office. He's like, so glad you're here. You're my guy. You're going to make this great. And I'm like, cool. Who am I replacing? He says, you're replacing Michael Lowry. And I'm like, what? You're kidding me. He says, no, no. I said, Michael Lowry is a 6'2" JFK Adonis. Again, do you want Michael Fox walking through the door? The fans are going to kill me and they're going to kill you. I don't care. You're my guy. We're going to do it. All right. So, you know, we went in and we did it. I never knew what the hell to do with that character. I didn't really know what that character was about. You know, I had long hair. He was like, keep it. I want you to be like the surfer dude. You're going to be moving. And I'm like, ugh, I have no idea what to do. I just kind of made it up and tried to make it as we went on. Yeah, we finished one live. And then Julia and I, it was weird. In 2010, Julia won the Emmy. And I was still always working. Like I was the voice of Miller Lite for a year and a half. Best job I ever had, by the way, ever had. I mean, you'd show up, you'd work maybe a week out of the year, lay down a bunch of tracks and just make a lot of money doing nothing. It was amazing. And one day I'll never forget it because I was the Miller Lite was also one of the proud sponsors of UFC, which I'm a huge UFC fan. And I used to watch the Ultimate Fighter on Wednesday night. And one night I'm sitting there going, okay, I get to hear my voice make a lot of money watching my favorite show again. And sure enough, it was somebody else. And I was, oh crap, that's over. So, yeah. So Julie and I, we just kind of, and I was really, one of my best friends is Bob Woods. And Woodsy had retired upstate to Kinderhook. And Julie and I found a house up there that we ended up going up there for a year and a half, about 2 years, hanging out. We said, you know, we're not really auditioning that much. We'll come into town if somebody wants to meet us or whatever. And we did that for, like I said, for about 2 years, lived upstate, had a great time, loved it up there. Julie didn't like it so much just because of the weather, really. The winters are gray and dingy and dank, as you all know. And then we just kind of got to the point where it was like, nah, this isn't working. Let's go back to LA. Maybe somebody will dust us off, you know, give us another shot. And we went back to LA. We didn't last 6 months. And we were like, oh God, we can't be in LA. This sucks. And I had brought Julie to Telluride in 2010. And she really loved it. So I was like, hey, let's do a recon mission to Telluride. And we did. My best friend lives up here. This guy, Axel, he and Ken and I are all great friends, but Axel's my longest, oldest friend. We've known each other since 1979. And he's family. He's my brother. And as is Ken, and if you're listening, Ken, I have to say that. well, no, I don't have to say that. I gladly say that. Anyway, so we came up and Julie and I went, let's do it. And I'd always, what I didn't tell you is in 97, when General Hospital fell into my lap in 3 hours, I had my house at the time I was living in LA in packed up because I was selling my house and moving to my house. I had a house up here in Telluride. I was moving to Telluride to teach skiing and just get away from it all. And then General Hospital fell in my lap in 3 hours and I didn't go. So I always knew in the back of my mind that this environment is something that I wanted to pursue. And that was going to be my second half to my, you know, that's was going to be my second career, if you will. And I wanted to teach skiing and whatever. So Julie and I came up in 2014 on a recon mission and we stayed. And that was it. We came back, packed up our stuff in LA, moved out here. In July of 2014. And I taught skiing for 2 years. And then I was a children's ski school supervisor for 6 and an adult supervisor for 1. And now I just retired this last winter. I just finished. a few months ago, I am officially and completely and totally retired. And that's awesome. My life.
Well, how's that? Yeah. How's life for Billy Warlock and Julie Pinson in Colorado?
It's awesome. It's pretty awesome. I mean, like right now, the reason I got to go is I got to go play golf. We were up in Telluride in almost 9 years, but came time to retiring. Telluride's harsh in the sense of climate. I mean, it's if you're not going to ski, the summers are unbelievable. They're so beautiful. It's a beautiful place. But, you know, I knew that I wasn't going to be skiing as much. And the truth of the matter is Telluride has turned more into a resort town than a funky ski town. And Julie and I were feeling boxed in a little bit, but we knew we didn't want to leave the area. Now, don't get me wrong. Telluride still has my heart and I love. And, you know, so many, in fact, the guys I'm playing golf with today are all from Telluride. They're coming down. So we moved about an hour and 10 minutes away down to a little town called Montrose. We're in Montrose. We retired on a golf course. And that's what I do. I play golf. And do what we want.
Do you miss acting? Do you miss being in the business?
You know what I miss? I do miss the camaraderie and the actual work aspect of it. I do. I mean, if somebody called me, I would love to go play. Because you know what's really inspired me? And the work out there is so flipping good. Some of these shows and the scripts, I mean, now granted, on your major networks, it's still all formulaic stuff and it's the same old stuff. But boy, these Netflix and, you know, Amazon and all these series out there. Of course, all I hear is, you're not making any money, but I would never go back to the business for money. I would go back to do the work. And the work out there is so outstanding. I mean, these shows are so darn good.
You have literally stopped time, as Steph said earlier. So do you get recognized as AJ, as Frankie from Baywatch, from any of these projects, just in living life in Colorado?
I get stared at. And yeah, I get stared at, but no, I'm actually kind of anonymous now. I'm just a guy. And I have to tell you, it's great for me to be just a guy because, you know, now I can be kind of the jackass that I've always been and don't have to worry about it, you know? So, you know, that's been really refreshing to be just me. It's really kind of cool that I don't have to worry about anything anymore, especially in today's time. You know, back when I was coming up, we didn't have social media.
Right.
We didn't have cameras on us 24 hours a day watching our every move. If we had, I don't think I would have lasted a week in the business. They would have gotten rid of me a long time ago. You know, who's this little jack off? I mean, come on. I mean, let's face it. I can be a lot of fun. I'll be the antithesis. I always had to watch my P's and Q's. And nowadays with these people, you know, gunning for you at every turn. I mean, there's so many different ways to be just humiliated out there and taken down. So I'm glad to not be in the business at this current time, to be honest. But yes, what I would love to go back and, because I have a lot more to draw from since, you know, over the last 9 years, so much has happened in my life personally. A lot of it great. And some of it, you know, I'm now in that stage in my life where people around me aren't around anymore. And it's extremely sad. You know, I mean, it makes me sad that you know, I mean, this is, you know, you're going to end up, my parents, thank God, are both alive. But, you know, let's face it. Time's ticking. And so, you know, things like that are happening in my life. You know, yeah, I lost John and Stewie and what have you, and now Jackie. And I mean, just crazy, crazy stuff that, you know, that's the stage of life that we're coming into, which is, it's not fun. You know, that's kind of the hard part about getting older. But it's, you know, I don't know where I'm going with that. I have different pain in my life now than I had back then. And, you know, pain means more to me now than it did when I was younger, right? You just let it roll off your back like water on a duck's back, if you will, right? Now it resonates. So I have a lot of stuff inside me that I could easily get out with no problem. I think I would be a better actor today than I was then, to be honest with you, if I was given that chance. I believe I still have it.
get in there and crush it if I was given the opportunity. But I don't have any connection to Hollywood anymore. I don't even have an agent anymore. So no, this is my new life, and it's great. I mean, I'm happy. I mean, I love my life. My life is good, you know. Hey, I had a 30-year career. That's not a bad run, you know. Made a lot of bad decisions. I mean, I turned left so many times when I should have turned right, business-wise. But I have no regrets as far as the decisions I made. Do I have regrets on the way I handled myself in certain situations? Of course I do. I mean, I was young and stupid and, you know, thought that I knew everything, and I knew nothing, you know. But I didn't really have a lot of... I think every young actor needs mentorship. You need people around you to smack you around when you're being an idiot. I had people that encouraged my craziness sometimes. And I think the two people that were the most real with me were definitely John and Stuart. And I'll tell you what, me getting the normal heart, that play had everything to do with John Engel. I mean, I, you know, John was a theater guy, right? That was his, he was a theater teacher. I remember when I got the opportunity to go read for that. I mean, John was like, get your butt over to my house. We're going to work on this thing. And we did. We worked and worked and worked. And luckily, the performance that I was able to give in the audition process was all because of John. You know, my take on what I was doing was completely different than his. And John's was always right. And so, yeah. Well, and so...
Everyone has such great stories about John, I feel, that has, you know, that have gone through, anyone who actually was his student, never mind anyone who worked with him. But before we let you go, as you look back on your, you know, just life in general and how it evolved, like, how would you say that your years in daytime shaped or changed it?
Oh, it both. I mean, it shaped and changed my career. Especially days back in the 80s. Because back then there was synergy, you know. If you were on a soap opera and you were popular and you were doing good work, you'd most indefinitely get a movie of the week or whatever that would launch you. That would be part of your deal, right? It gave the audience the opportunity, you know, to see you in a different light. Because back then, if you were doing TV, you weren't going to do movies, right? It took people like, you know, Tom Selleck and Michael Fox to break that mold. To show that, hey, if people like you, they're going to follow you. They didn't pigeonhole you as a daytime person. So, you know, people like that were instrumental in breaking that mold. And so, you know, doing days, and NBC was so good to me back then, because when I left, I mean, Baywatch was NBC. That was Brandon Tartikoff, God rest his soul. He was so good to me. I mean, he gave me Baywatch. He gave me those two movies of the weeks that followed Baywatch that led into the series again when I did, you know, those wonderful Class Cruise and something else. I did a swimsuit. Classics. Just classic movie of the weeks. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, hey, they were fun. But, no, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do things like that if it wasn't for daytime in the 80s. But daytime in the 80s was a special time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it, daytime in the 80s, come on, more people watch that than watch those nighttime shows that were a hit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We paid for nighttime. That's how it was done. Right. And in General Hospital, they were it, daddies. And it was a special time. So, yes, definitely. And it taught me how to be an actor. I mean, you do daytime well, there's nothing you can't do. I mean, it's theater. It is theater. You know, you like a stage, everything is, you know, outside to the fourth wall with the cameras out there. The movement you make is you're turning to the audience like you do on a play. It is theater. And it was the best experience I ever had. And I must say, there's not a show that I've ever been a part of that, you know, in the daytime world, that the cast and the crew are, you know, they're spectacular. I mean, everybody. I never had a bad experience on a show on a personal level, ever. Not once, ever. Now, sure, was I disgruntled about character direction or things like that? Of course, but that's my own axe to grind. But as far as the everyday work, no. It was incredible. incredible all across the board, and all the actors and crew. No, I'm repeating myself because, you know, it was a special time and it still is. Those are still some of my closest friends. Right. And I was one of the fortunate ones that got to do a ton of work outside of daytime, you know? And yeah, they're still my closest friends.
I literally could talk to you all day, but this was such an amazing catch up and I'm so happy to see how well you and Julie are doing. And thanks for all your time today.
Well, thank you so much, ladies. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Billy Warlock for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.